Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show as we swing on through another weekday here on the Press Box. Patrick Creighton back after a chest injury yesterday, as well as Aaron Rabel back in the fold. We love all of that and so much more as we get to all the topics of the day locally, nationally, as it relates to sports and other things. Astros back at it. Two-game series with the Rockies, a yet another team that they should mop up with, but they haven't been able to master yet. We talked about the possible issues and should there be concern or not, but we're moving forward on that. As we hopefully see a quick two-game sweep of the Rockies, thanks to your Houston Astros. But Alex Bregman will not be in the lineup again tonight. It looks like, for as much as we all were waiting with anticipation that he would be active, because even he said he looked to be active during the homestand. There's only two games left in it. He was not with the Skeeters this weekend. He was in the dugout. So there was even more anticipation that he'd be active. And yet Dusty Baker says, no, he's still a ways away, maybe up to 10 days. That is not a good sign for an Astros team that suddenly is dealing with an A's team that's nipping at your buns.
No, and it's the second time that Alex's timeline has been pushed back. If you remember before the break, he said he was looking to get 20, 30 at-bats, be back, you know, which would put him back right around, say, the first week of August. Well, that didn't happen. Then it looked like it might be this week, and now that's not going to happen. It's going to be another 10 days out. So they're being very conservative with Alex Bregman, and the fact that he had that little hammy flare-up, I guess, is your explanation for why they're taking it a little more conservative. You want Alex Bregman, especially playing the way we know Alex Bregman can. You want that guy playing in September and October. So getting him right and making sure he's fully healthy is job one. Then getting him up to speed so that he's playing like, you know, the all-star MVP-type caliber hitter that he is, that's job two.
All right, so hopefully they get back to winning ways. Hopefully Jake Odorizzi gets it figured out, because time is of the essence. And if Jake doesn't figure it out, like we talked about in hour number one tonight, then there's a really, really strong case to be made that Jake doesn't see a starting nod the rest of the season, and maybe he finds a different role with this team. Because the long ball has been a problem. Control has been a problem. And the Jake Odorizzi in an Astros uniform isn't even close to the Jake Odorizzi of the past.
No. I mean, Odorizzi's ERA is near 5. And the home run issue, 13 homers in 63 2/3. So Odorizzi's been serving him up.
Yep.
This is a guy, like, when they signed him, the whole idea, like, it wasn't a bad sign when they made it. They're not paying him a lot of money. But you needed somebody that could take the ball every fifth day and give you 5 innings.
Well, you thought you did.
The problem is he's not necessarily giving you 5 innings. And sometimes those 5 innings are bloody awful. For a little while, he was on a nice run. But every time he'd go into the sixth, the wheels would come off. So you have to know who and what Jake Odorizzi is. And, you know, Dusty said today when it came to Jake Odorizzi, sometimes you just got to get back to some old-fashioned country chucking. Stop thinking and fire it. Trust your stuff. And maybe that's part of the issue. And you've heard Odorizzi say he's got to get some mechanics straightened out. You know, how much is he overthinking it? I don't know. But if Odorizzi goes out and gets smacked around today, you've got to consider taking him out of the rotation and working with him on the side to figure out whatever the hell was wrong with him and get him back to throwing the ball the right way.
Sometimes it's not about trying to fix something, and you're not, it's Mr. Goodwrench. It ain't the tools. And you, Mr. Goodwrench, haven't figured it out. We've been hearing this for quite some time now. I got some things I got to figure out. I got a pitch or two that's not working for me that I got to really work on. Well, you know what? We don't have like half the season left to work on this. And you already got a late start when you started the season because you had an abbreviated spring training because you signed late and you haven't lived up to any of the expectations. So now when you maybe didn't have to, because at the start of the year, I think the reason why they got Odorizzi was they said, well, we had all these young arms that performed well this year. This last year, but it was a short season, a lot of kind of crazy variables. I'm not so sure that all these guys are going to be able to do what they did a year ago. Little did we know that was more of the bullpen and the and only Paredes's and guys like that of the world and Abreu's and such, as opposed to the good starting pitching that you got, but then Fromber broke his finger. Obviously, Urquidy's been hurt twice, and you've been screwing around back and forth with Javier and Garcia.
Part of Odorizzi's issue, to be fair to him, is the Astros screwed him up in the beginning. He signed, what, middle of March? And then they pushed him into the rotation, what, a week into the season after Christian Javier had made like three starts and he was pitching great. And they pushed Javier to the pen to make room for Odorizzi, who clearly was not ready to start. But they rushed him because, oh, well, we paid him, so now we got to rush him. That was stupid. They didn't need to do that. But they did, and then he got bombed, and he got bombed, and then he went on the IL. And then he came back, and the first game he pitched was against the Red Sox at Fenway. And he wasn't bad. Like, Fenway's a tough place to pitch. That is an excellent lineup. That's a tough park to pitch in. And he pitched okay, first start back. And then he got on a little run. And he pitched really well for a while, probably about 5 weeks, pitched really well. And now for the last couple of weeks, he's been getting smacked. So whatever it is that's wrong with him, if he can't get it righted for today's game, yeah, it's time to pull him out. And this goes back to, well, why did you do all this dumb stuff before? Because part of that dumb stuff now has you with a guy who could be starting games in Christian Javier, probably not fully stretched out.
That's my biggest issue.
If you have to put Javier into the rotation, his first start, he could probably only go four innings because he's only been going two innings and then sitting for a week.
That's my problem, too, that I kept harping on, which is the fact that if he was truly going to be a bullpen arm, then he had to learn how to get ready quicker. He had to bounce back faster. He had to get back-to-back days under his belt. They didn't do any of those things. So now he's kind of in limbo between both. He's not ready to be a consistent relief pitcher for you. And as you just notated, he's not even close to becoming a starting pitcher again for you.
This is something that I've talked about with Javier all year long. And that is, if you're going to move him to the pen, especially considering the issues they had in the pen, why was he not working as a setup guy? Why do you continue to bring him in like as a tandem guy where, all right, this pitcher can only give me four innings and then I'll go to Javier for two plus and then I won't pitch Javier again for five more days. The way they have used him this year doesn't make any sense. If you wanted him in the pen, you could have used him as a high leverage reliever, especially when he was really grooving earlier in the year. Now, He's losing his feel for the zone because he's pitching once a week out of the pen for like an inning or two, which, again, if he's one of your better pitchers, to not utilize what he's best at, not utilize his skill set and have him wasting in the bullpen as essentially a long man, as a, you know, a guy that you bring in when you've got to save some bullets out of the rest of the pen. Why would you use him like that? It doesn't make any sense. They haven't figured out what to do with him. And now they might have to get him back into the rotation.
This is like just like I was talking about when you're experimenting with your lineup and minor league players at different positions this late in the season on from a defensive perspective and a lineup perspective, from a pitching perspective. This is not the ideal position you want to be in for a team chasing a championship. This is not the position of a team that is this many games over 500 in a position of strength currently where you're still experimenting and trying to figure out your starting rotation and pitchers that are going to be available for you when you indeed realize this was a position of strength for most of the season. But you've let some certain things slip through the cracks. Like you said, Javier is a guy that you could have had ready and waiting if he was going to indeed be stretched out the whole year. And there was ways to do that. If he wasn't and you knew you were never going back to him, then you should have had him ready to get ready quicker in the pen. Because both Odorizzi and Javier, when they've been relegated to put into the bullpen, they still think they're warming up like they're a starter and they have all day. And we've seen it become an issue for this team. But that's my bigger problem. This team shouldn't be dealing with this now. It should already be figured out. And you had seven quality starters. Now you're scrambling to find four before the most important time of the season.
And if if you peel the onion back a little bit further, right? Javier, who has started 9 games and he's been in 25, he's already thrown 80 2/3 innings. If you move him back into the starting rotation, he's easily going to eclipse his career high innings.
Sure.
Luis Garcia is already there. He's already at 106. McCullers is at 109. He's only made 19 starts. So all of your guys essentially are going to hit those numbers. You want to watch them. Like, you don't want them to go 50 innings over their career high. But the position that you have put yourself in now, they're going to have to roll dice because they didn't go out and get another guy to alleviate those innings pitched. Jake Odorizzi, of all the stars, the guys who have started games, he has the fewest innings pitched because he's a 5-inning pitcher.
Plus, he had a late start.
But I'm saying he's made 14 starts. Well, so is Jose Urquidy. He's pitched 14 less innings than Urquidy in the same number of starts.
But ideally, you also realize in your heart of hearts and in your smart mind itself that Jake Odorizzi isn't one of those four guys you want on the mound to start a game for the Houston Astros
in
the playoffs.
No, he's absolutely not. But his job is to help you eat the innings during the season. That's what he was signed for. You have to get through all those innings. Somebody's got to pitch them. And they never had, because of just injury after injury after injury in the bullpen, they never had the horses in the pen to have guys who could come in, be long relievers, and be somewhat useful. Everybody who they've tried in the long relief role,
you need to
has
find,
gotten shell.
You got to find four guys. Up until last start, McCullers looked like he was your surefire one.
I think he still is.
And I agree with you. Greinke's, no matter what, going to be two or three. He'll be in the mix. Is it Garcia and Fromber and that's it? And you just at a certain point, and obviously, like you said, you still have to get through the last 50 or so games, and you've got to stay in the position that you're in. So you're probably going to need a couple of these guys. But when push comes to shove, when it means the most and everything's on the line, those are your four.
If Garcia's arm can make it, he's in the four. Like I said, he's already at his career high in innings. There's 2 months of the season to go. If his arm can handle the workload, and I'm worried about that because young pitchers...
I hate you jinxing that.
When they have a lot... Man, I hate seeing young guys get hurt because they're overworked. So they're going to have to find ways to mitigate. If Garcia's in the game and they're up big, maybe you got to pull him after 5 and go to your pen if you got a 5-6 run lead to save some bullets in his arm. But right now, Garcia's one of your four unless his arm falls off. And then if his arm does fall off, you're really hoping Jose Urquidy, his arm is back on.
All right, we've talked about the pitching. I want to see where you guys think that the offense is. Bleacher Report just came up with their top 10 best offenses and best lineups in baseball. Pat seems to believe everything's fine. We'll see where the Astros actually sit in the top 10 as we come back, but see what you guys think as well. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at New Brakes. Because, look, I got my brakes fixed here while we were doing a show a few weeks ago. Less than 45 minutes is all it took. They came right here to the studio. They did a quality job. Their technicians only do brakes. They don't upsell you on anything else. It's no nonsense. They do what they got to do, fix what they got to fix. Their price is competitive with any brake shop in town. And the most important thing is when you talk about saving money and getting good prices, on top of having competitive prices with any brake shop in town, time is money. You're multitasking. I did a show. People do all the listeners that have followed my lead and done it have told me they came to my garage at work. They were in the parking garage fixing my brakes while I was in meetings and doing things, and it was painless. Other people have said they came to my house. I cut the lawn while they fixed my brakes in the driveway or in the garage. It's simple. It's the same way as why you don't go grocery shopping for an hour when all you got to do is do it curbside, and you save all that time. That's what New Brakes is all about. Go to nubrakes.com and see all the things that you got to do. Sign up and get them to come to you. The bottom line is New Brakes comes to you and do what they do, and you save time and money. And you mentioned ESPN 97.5, you also save 10%. But the fact is, it's the new way people are doing brakes, and it's the best way to go about it. I did it. You can too. Several listeners are with me on this. Check them out today. It's newbrakes.com.
Brand new whip, just hopped in. I got options. I can pass that like Stockton. Just joshing. I'm spending this holiday locked in. My body got rid of them toxins. Sports in the top 10.
years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit InnovationMap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
A new era is about to begin. Join us for the next chapter.
Do you want to take a leap of faith?
Voices, new shows, more passion and coverage of the teams you care about.
Deep to left field. You've got to be kidding me. Altuve's done it again.
The next chapter begins Monday, August 16th on the independent voice for Houston sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, here we go. Rolling through the final hour of the show. We were talking Astros pitching before the break. Top 10 just came out. Bleacher Report, best lineups in baseball. Pat's got you believe in injuries or not. They're good. They're fine. All right? I love where they sit offensively for the season. I am concerned with Yuli and Bregman. Yuli out. Bregman continues to be out. Dusty already verifying what we already knew in his pregame chat at Minute Maid just a few minutes ago, stating that Bregman obviously will not be in the lineup today. I don't know that he went any further to say when they expect him back, but the early indication as of this morning was up to 10 days. Yuli is on the 10-day IL retroactive to, I think, the end of this week, but hopefully there's no setbacks there because this team is only two games ahead of the A's. So with that being said, Bleacher Report, top 10 offenses in baseball. Care to guess, Patrick, without cheating, where your Houston Astros lineup sits?
Unfortunately, I can't do this without cheating because I've already read the piece.
Pat, you were. Okay, Aaron, we're the Astros, top 10 offenses in baseball. Lineup-wise, as currently analyzed by Bleacher Report. Bleacher Report's just doing it at this point in the season.
I'm going to say probably four.
Close. Number one, because it's the gift that keeps on giving financially, is the Dodgers. I mean, at the deadline, you don't, yeah, it's one thing to add Scherzer, but you add a stud in Trey Turner, and you're going to have him play second base because you have Seager at shortstop coming off of injury. Seager's still dinged up, so therefore, they're going to put Trey Turner at shortstop. They don't miss a beat. So the Dodgers, with their star-studded lineup of Mookie Betts, Justin Turner, Trey Turner, Max Muncy, Cody Bellinger, who sucks.
But you yet, can't mention him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when you're not hitting 200.
591 OPS.
Yeah, you suck, but the Dodgers are number one. Number two is the hard-charging Toronto Blue Jays. Again, hard to argue when you've got Vlad Guerrero in the midst of an MVP-type season, George Springer, who was the player of the month last month, Marcus Semien on a one-year deal, who is absolutely a stick, Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez was an all-star, Yuli's little brother, and others, including a Randall Grichuk guy who I said all along would have been the ideal fit for center field, but that's before all injuries made Toronto have to hang on to him. Toronto's number two. Your Astros currently number three. So third best offense in baseball when healthy, because as they listed, Altuve, Brantley, Gurriel, Alvarez, Correa, Tucker, Aledimus Diaz, Chaz, and the machete, because they indicate the injured Alex Bregman. Even without Bregman, they're lapping the American League field with an average of 5.5 runs per game scored this season. Altuve leading the team with 25 home runs. Alvarez and Tucker not far behind with 22 and 21 dingers respectively. Brantley's hitting 329. Yuli's hitting 324. Again, as long as they're healthy, I don't have concerns about the offense. But the major concern I have is we're now getting into crunch time and I need them healthy.
And right now you're... what, you're down two guys and you're a little concerned about...
You didn't beat the Twins three out of four games and you had a hard time scoring runs against the Twins starting pitching and other pitchers. That's a problem, Pat. Can't tell me it's not.
you scored five runs and you lost. I'm not putting the blame on the offense there. I'm putting the blame on the offense when they couldn't score the guy from second base an extra.
How many of those were runs of the five runs they scored were after all was said and done? Or because, again, losing three of four against that pitching staff, you probably should have scored a whole lot more. And you should have had leads in most of these games instead of playing from behind the whole time.
And part of that goes to your starting pitching, which did not pitch well in a lot of these games. I said I'm more concerned about the pitching than I am about the offense because they're going to score. I'm worried about all their arms going to not fall off.
The surprise of this whole list, by the way, is number four because they're not a playoff team by any stretch of the imagination, but the Cincinnati Reds.
They're not, but you know what? That division is not great, and
Brewers?
They could make a run. I don't think they can catch the Brewers.
They're
but
not.
I think they can be a real pain in the ass in the second half because they can score a lot of runs.
Well, I mean, they've got some guys that are absolutely having career years.
And Votto's just gone nuts.
I mean, you know, Votto's a stud, and Castellanos has found his found whatever he had to find and got right in the ship, and he's hitting the heck out of it. And then you got Jesse Winker, an all-star, who no one expected to be a relevant part of that lineup and do the things he's been doing. And you know, they've got Moustakas, who's an experienced veteran. But they've got a young lineup that is going to be reckoned with in the future. But I didn't expect when you talk about the top five offensive lineups in baseball, the Reds would be number four. Red Sox are number five. That's another team you didn't expect at the start of the year. But when you see the guys in the lineup, it's hard to argue with the fact that they've got a really solid baseball club.
Their guys are hitting like you expected them to hit before last season. Same thing with the Astros. You know, before this season, so many people were like, oh, Altuve, he's never going to be that player again because he had a bad abbreviated season a year ago. Boy, do those people look dumb.
Charlie Pulo.
Carlos Correa's had a bounce back year. Tucker has continued to grow. Alvarez played, what, two games last year? So the idea that the Astros were, their offense was dead and buried, only if you were someone who could only look at a 60-game window and say, oh, well, this must be what's going to happen because you have no context of, you know, bigger sample size, did you think that?
You know what? It's crazy, though, Pat, when you look at this list, and I'll give you all 10, but the thing that was most interesting to me other than the Astros at three, because I think if they were healthy, they should be at two or one with the Dodgers, you know, side by side. 4, 5, and 6 at the start of the year, I don't think if any of the three of us wrote down who the teams we thought would have the best lineups in baseball, I don't think any one of the three of us would have won, let alone two or three of these teams. It's the Red Sox who were completely down and out last year and didn't show you any signs they were coming back. But four being the Reds, five being the Red Sox, six being the best record in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants.
That's the
biggest surprise.
No one
saw that coming.
Because, I mean, like, is everybody on the Giants playing better than they have in years? Buster Posey's found the fountain of youth. Evan Longoria, before he got hurt, he was playing. Brandon Belt was having a good season before he got hurt.
And Yastrzemski's not hitting it like he was a year ago for average, but he's still solid.
Hitting dingers. And they have gotten phenomenal pitching that nobody in the world
who saw Johnny Cueto having a comeback?
Kevin Gausman's pitching like an ace. Everything has clicked for them. And it's almost like you're sitting there waiting, well, when does the clock strike 12 on the Giants? Because everything has worked out for them so perfectly. It's like this can't realistically continue. The one that surprised me the most, believe it or not, is who's at 10. Because that offense has been trash.
Chris Farley's favorite team, the Yankees.
It has been trash. And yeah, they went out and got Anthony Rizzo, who's a good power bat. And Joey Gallo's a good power bat. Not that he can hit 240.
But that's the mantra of their whole lineup. They're not hitting for average. They're either hitting home run. It's the true outcome lineup. When you start putting Stanton and Gallo and Judge in the middle of that lineup, I mean, you don't want to fight them in the back alley, but at the same time, they're not all knocking the cover off the ball for average.
Well, at some point, doesn't performance have to matter? Because the Yankees offense, which is, quote, hot right now.
They've won 9 of their last 11.
They've got 470 runs scored. The number of teams they have outscored in the American League, the Baltimore Orioles. the Texas Rangers. That's it.
They scored 13 runs and 10 runs in back-to-back games this past weekend alone. I said they've won 9 out of 11, and that's now with Rizzo being out because of COVID. But the fact that they pushed all the right buttons, and since the trade deadline, they're winning at a clip where they're suddenly only 2 games out of a playoff spot, means that whether you look at that lineup and go, it shouldn't be doing what it's doing, and swing and miss tendencies should lead you to believe that they're going to have a lot more low-scoring games than they are big deluges of runs, but they're doing what they need to do right now.
Well, let's keep in mind, their 13 runs and 10 runs came against the Baltimore Orioles, the same team the Astros scored 26 runs on in 3 games. Everybody scores runs on the Orioles. They can't pitch.
But everybody doesn't score a run on the Twins, Patrick, because we just talked about 5 runs from your Astros, and that was a high. But then you look at the White Sox last night, and they absolutely demolished them, which is what the Astros should have done.
Well, they didn't. The Yankees didn't hang no double digits on the Seattle Mariners, even though they did win 3 of 4. They scored 3.
You hang your hat on that one, big dog.
And 5. There were no 10 runs there.
All right,
I want to see
10.
The Yankees actually Yankees do 10. Something for a period.
Well, I mean, the Yankees, we know, is the argument, is this real or is this just a flash in the pan and they're going to regress back to what they've been all year? They have one more game against the Orioles tonight, and then they go 2 games against the Royals, sorry, and then the weekend they take on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they take on the White Sox in Chicago. I think that's going to be your real, hey, are you actually the Yankees that everybody thought you were going to be, or was it, we're going to beat up on bad teams?
Their starting pitching is going to be the answer to everything. It's either going to be the key to them getting there or getting close or completely falling off the planet. Because lately it's been a lot better too, obviously, and Gerrit Cole has been the workhorse, but they're getting more contributions. They got it again last night. That's the kind of thing that they have to keep relying on, as well as, or it doesn't matter how many runs they score or don't score.
Speaking of, Astros lineup is out.
Yes.
Altuve, Brantley, Diaz at third base.
Because he's been hot with the bat.
Yordan, Correa, Tucker, Chaz in center. Your favorite, Taylor Jones at first.
Ugh. And, you don't have any choice.
And Machete behind the plate.
You don't have any choice at first base.
Not right now, you don't.
No, you got to go with it. At least he got a couple of knocks in over the weekend. So he's hitting what, better than Joey Gallo? No. All right, we'll continue on. By the way, the list was Yankees at 10, White Sox at 9, Padres at 8 to finish out the list. And then 7 Tampa Bay Rays, who obviously have the best record in the American League right now. All right, we'll continue with the final half hour in just a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Conveniently located near downtown Houston, 2 locations, Pearland Lake Jackson, Dr. O and his staff, they're focused on taking care of you. Your health is your wealth. You got to invest in yourself. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they have answers to all your questions, and they have solutions to all the things that you thought could not be fixed. They take care of people on a daily basis. Both men and women have hormone therapy that they get involved in. You want to get in a workout program, it only takes a minute, and you can get a full body composition analysis. And if you want to recover quicker, they have HGH peptide therapy and so much more. They have tons of ways to get you started. It starts with you making that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com and find out that most major insurance has accepted discounts for military personnel and first responders, but book the appointment. Once you go in and you get that consultation, be honest with them with those tough questions, because if you are, they're going to find you results and put you on a program that gets you where you thought you could never be once again. It's fantastic, and their staff is just so overwhelmingly making you feel at home and comfortable. They do what they do, and they do it better than anybody else. Dr. O used to be at the other places. Now he's where he can make a difference. Check him out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, wrapping it up with the final half hour of the program on a Tuesday in the big city. By the way, I don't know if you've caught this or not, but Pat Creighton's with me today, otherwise known as Patrick PC Creighton.
What?
Yeah. Aaron Raybould's back after a little bit of a... Well, I shouldn't say just Aaron Raybould, because Pat had a chest injury, a contusion of such, yesterday. If you read the spelling on Twitch to what he let out was his ailment, he and Holly Saunders might have had some work done. But Pat's back.
So too many TIs.
So is my man Aaron Raybould, and we continue to talk about everything that's been going on in sports. But I want to throw this out there, because you got to be careful sometimes, and we talked about this with PJ Tucker, but I don't. This case is a lot worse. We said at the time when PJ Tucker turned down 2 years and like $18 million or $17 million, like, are you sure you want to do that, PJ? And then he signed a 2-year deal with Miami this offseason for $15 million. So maybe he made the wrong choice. If you're Dennis Schroeder, who thought he was a max player at the end of the year for the Lakers, who acted and talked about and carried himself like he was going to get paid. He was so confident in that, people, that he turned down 4 years, $84.5 million, and oh, by the way, guaranteed. The market's starting to dry up. The big money's been spent. Dennis Schroeder right now is contemplating a 1-year deal with the Celtics, $5 million.
Bad decision.
That's half the full mid-level. He's looking for the full at a little over 9. No matter what you're looking at now, Schroeds, it ain't even close to 4 years and $84.5 million.
You remember when we were in college and NBA Jam, the video game, just come out?
He's heating up.
Bad decision. You know, it's funny. Some of these guys don't realize, like, how many, like, blessings they're being handed. They don't realize $84 million is life-changing. That's generational-changing money. And I'm just going to say no to $84 million, like, hey, no big deal. I can just say no to $84 million because I know I'm going to get so much more money. And to go from $84 million to six, now look, $6 million is still a lot of money, but $84 million to $6 million?
Guaranteed. Like, you're not changing not only your life, you're changing your kids' lives and several generations of lives. And you're right. There's been so much sick money thrown around in the NBA that I guess suddenly you start getting big for your britches going, I can make more. Can you?
When you basically turn around $78 million, like, I didn't need this, you've got to have some really hard looks in the mirror. And those looks are going to be ugly because there is no way to come to terms with, I threw away $78 million.
Well, this goes for athletes, this goes for musicians, actors, and everything like that. And I had a professor tell class this in college. You ever become good, you ever write a hit song, you ever get big, stop hiring people who you know to be around you. Your manager's not your cousin. Your agent is not your best friend. You put the smartest people you can find around you and people who are not afraid to slap you in the face and go, check your ego. This is the best move for you, who are going to look out solely for what is the best move. Not what do I think, what would I do? No, he needs to look at who is around him. Now, was it Dennis Schroeder looking in the mirror going, I'm worth $120 million. I'm Dennis Schroeder. Or is it the people around him who went, nah, man, I think we can get more. It's a good offer, but I think we can get him to sweeten the pot.
Okay,
because at that point, you get rid of everybody around you who gave you that advice.
This is like Dallas Keuchel when he thought that he was going to get 25 a year for 4 years,
yeah,
turned down the Astros money, and now he's still trying to recoup it enough to make what he would have made. But I will give you the flip side of that, Aaron, and I will give you the argument to that, which is LeBron James. LeBron James took his four high school buddies, and all of them play a significant role in his life, and it hasn't stopped him from making boatloads of cash, and all of them doing very well as well.
But he's also the anomaly.
The worst case in all of all the guys that ever were his friends is Randy, who is his personal assistant, essentially, but Randy travels with the team on the private jets, does the things so LeBron can focus on hoops, gets paid handsomely, I'm sure, but does his job.
He had to be, like, the best ever. Like LeBron is the best of his generation.
He is the arguable greatest of all time. Those are the guys who don't count because the money is going to follow them everywhere.
When you're tier four, tier five.
I get that.
Yeah, you can't you can't be making those decisions. And I don't know who Dennis Schroeder's agent is, but if you as my agent advised me, don't take $84 million, we'll get more, and then you settle for six, people are getting fired. Because there's no way in hell.
It starts with your agent.
I'm paying an agent commission when that agent cost me $78 million. There's no way in hell I'm keeping that dude.
Which you shouldn't. But at the same time, because there's so much money being thrown around out there, and the agents know that they don't want to settle for less than fair market value, so they get their share too, that they're going to push the envelope and gamble on themselves or gamble on him. But now he's facing a Carlos Correa situation. Now he's got 1 year. He's got to play his ass off in a situation where replacing Kemba Walker, at least he's got the opportunity with good pieces around him to do something. But if he doesn't, he's looking at another 1 or 2 year deal in and around the six range, as opposed to trying to chase that 84 mil down and have it under belt, in pocket, with no one taking it away because it's guaranteed. That's where at some point you go, I'd like to think I'm a max player, Christian Wood, but I'll take what I know is going to give me a ton of security, and maybe in 4 years there's going to be another deal coming around the corner.
Once you get into 1 year deal guy range, it's hard to get out of that. It's not like, oh, I'm Kevin Durant and I can do these one and ones.
No, it's a danger zone for sure.
Or LeBron can do one and ones, or you know, guys like that who are elite players can just keep opting out so they can sign another deal and max out on the cap the next time. This year the cap's not gonna go up much. And the cap is not expected to go up much over the next couple of years. So if you're Dennis Schroeder, you've got to go 1 year deal and hope that next year, because the cap isn't necessarily going up so much, and we're seeing the best players re-up with their existing teams to get the most money, can you be, quote, like a premier free agent next year because maybe the pool isn't that big? How do you get there? Well, you got to get it by being on a team like the Celtics where you can put up big numbers and win a lot of games. Because if you
I got news for you, though. The money ain't coming from Boston if you do it because you got too many big salaries to pay there too.
No, he's got to look at getting paid next year by putting up numbers with a winning team.
So I'm saying he's got to do Correa.
Yeah.
Well, this is another way that it contrasts what the Dallas Keuchel thing was. When Dallas Keuchel wanted his big payday, he had had moderate paydays. And we know that he wasn't flush with cash like the average actual
wasn't
star.
Actually in his prime either.
Dennis Schroeder has made $69 million in his career so far. He's got generational money already. I could see that maybe he looks at it and goes, if I take 1 year and I just play my ass off, I can bank on a nine-figure contract. I could see
but Aaron,
that.
He was banking on being a Laker. He was banking on after a championship and everything else, they're going to want him back. He wasn't banking on a trade for Russell Westbrook.
Once you hit that, I mean, he's at $70 million, you know, that he's made. Now
we see that as transcending money. So these guys don't.
But it depends on his mentality. He might also have the mentality of, I want a title. I'll take 1 year. I'll get a big contract. Or maybe I'll take 1 year, see what happens with the market, see what happens with old man Lakers over there, and reassess after this next year of playing, making a lot less money. But then all of a sudden I can look at the landscape, and if I've already cemented myself by putting up ridiculous offensive numbers for 1 year, then every team is going to want me, and I can
but
pick
think about
which
that,
one
Aaron,
is going to be the title
in that 1 year, your chances for putting up ridiculous numbers when you already have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and you also know that you got a kid named Pritchard behind you that's going to be the point guard of the future, but you've got enough offensive weapons on that team that you're not going to score 20 a game every night. You're not going to. Your best bet is to like really get your assists up like 10-plus range and try and do that and convince people. But your best opportunity, you got a ring. You were on the Lakers. It looked like you were a guy that everybody thought was still had plenty left in the tank, that was a guy that was a part of it. And then all of a sudden, you had a bad playoff. They found Russell Westbrook. You're sitting there holding the bag going, I don't have $84 million in it, and I don't know how much I'm going to get this back by the end of my career.
I understand I'm looking at it from a little bit different point of view, but you're on the team you want to be with with the greatest player of his generation and the best big man in the league. And you've already won a title. You didn't win this year because your team was all beat up. But you're on the team you want to be on with the players you want to be around. You are, at best, the third option on any given night. And you have the opportunity over the next 4 years to make more money than you've made in your entire career so far. Remember, you came from...
And you know you're still going to be in the mix because you got LeBron.
You came from a really bad Atlanta team. And you looked that in the mouth and said, pass.
It's self-inflicted. It's all. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. Him and or his agent, they're going to be kicking themselves on that one for a long time. All right, I got one segment to go on the show. We'll wrap it up next. Stay right with us. It's the Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. Starting Monday, August 16th, change is on the way. Join us for the next chapter on the independent voice for Houston sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Summer is here, and ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 are hitting the road on a summer circuit through the greater Houston area. Visit our events and register to win a family getaway to Lafayette, the heart of Louisiana's Cajun and Creole country. Listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Final segment of the show. Sometimes, man, the Twitch is where it's at to catch the real stuff we can't say on air. But we had some fun again today. Always good to have Pat, PC, Patrick, Creighton back, and Aaron as we wrap up a Tuesday on the show. I got some good news here thanks to Battery Chuck. I'll just leave it there on Twitch. But confirmed by my man Patrick Creighton, the Astros have reinstated and activated, lo and behold, Pedro Baez.
Baez,
oh, he's
is
not
bad.
Throwing flat. He's not throwing a mound session in the bullpen. He's active.
Pedro Baez is finally active. Rafael Montero hits the 10-day with right shoulder. Andre Scrub gets transferred from the 10-day to the 60-day. He's got a shoulder issue. Your good buddy Brooks Raley is back from his suspension.
Can we permanently suspend him? Can we just put him on the Sugar Land Skeeters?
Put him on the Deshaun list?
Yeah, I don't care where you put him, but don't put him on the active roster. It's like what Linus has with his blanket, Dusty has with Brooks Raley. It's that security. I can't stand how many times he goes to Raley, and you guys all know that. I would rather have him now not in the mix, because at least with Taylor, you got a lefty that can get guys out, that throws a little harder, that can be a little bit more effective. But, okay, I'm really excited to see Pedro Baez now, because the wait has been forever, literally. But if he gives you anything at all, and look, I think it was just icing on the cake, whatever you got from Montero. I said to you during the break, it didn't look like shoulder discomfort. It looked like something under his arm and where he was grabbing. But I fully did not, once it happened, I fully expected he was done for the year. So he was a throw-in in the deal anyway. But if Baez ends up being ready to go and he's effective like he was and he's got the experience being in the Dodgers pen in the playoffs and all that, I'm excited, man. That's another good ad for an arm. Now, if you can just get me those fielders healthy and Yuli and Bregman, I'll be really giddy like you, Pat.
No, if Baez is able to come back and pitch the way he has throughout his career, that's a really good bullpen.
Hell yeah.
We talked about the deadline, how they turned maybe the worst pen or second worst pen in the league into a top three pen in the American League. Well, they might be better now because that is...
Here's another
big ad.
This is a late season trade, the second deadline type trade, without having to do a damn thing. You're getting another arm with playoff experience that could possibly help you. bonus win for the Astros there. But he's not a starting pitcher.
No, and does this mean that, hey, now maybe we can stretch out Christian Javier and get him back in the rotation? Oh, my goodness.
I said it yesterday. You heard me say it. Look, whether you – and I didn't know Baez was coming back. But I said, it looks like it's about the time that you still have these a good amount of time left that you can at least kind of restretch him out because I think you're going to need him. And as you continue to harp on, which I agree with you on, when you have the same injury twice to the same shoulder in Urquidy, as close as he's getting to coming back again, he's probably just as close to getting hurt again.
And isn't that kind of like what we're looking at with Jacob deGrom? Like, how many times is he going to have this, all right, well, the same part of my body, the same part of my arm hurts, same part of my arm hurts. All right, I feel good. I go out, you know, seven innings, one hit, next start, three pitches, got to come out of the game. It's same thing kind of with Jose Urquidy. He's, you know, it's not that he hasn't pitched well, but same shoulder, same issue. How long before we find out ultimately he needs surgery? Usually you don't continue to have the same injury repeatedly and not wind up ultimately having surgery. At this point, it's can he get back at some point, make it through the year, and then, you know, in the offseason have surgery. That's what Justin Verlander tried to do last season. After he got hurt, it was, okay, I'm going to rehab. I'm going to try to get back. I'm going to try to get back. And ultimately, he could never make it back, and it just delayed surgery for 2 months. So I hope that we don't have that issue with Jose Urquidy, that he will hopefully be able to strengthen up whatever the issue is in his shoulder and not necessarily have to go under the knife. You'd hate to see him have to have another major surgery.
You took the words right out of my mouth, though. I mean, when you have these kind of issues, you're just trying to get through the season, and then at the end of the season, you're having some kind of surgery. It might be minor. It might be arthroscopic. It might not be anything, you know, too much of a setback in terms of a rehab, but I think there's something that's got to fix it so it doesn't become a reoccurring issue again and again and again. You've seen it with many of the Astros pitchers over the years, where that kind of thing happens. Before we get out of here, also, not necessarily breaking news, but we had mentioned the fact that Watson continues to suit up, but he is going to be held back and not go to Green Bay, it looks like, with the team. Unlike every other day when we said we'll update it on a day-to-day basis, Mark Berman's Twitter had David Culley talking on Watson's situation and the preseason opener at Green Bay, as well as if he will play in the preseason.
Well, he's unlikely to play in the game for sure. So we'll make a decision later on in the week as to what's going to happen with that.
Is that based off of injury or?
Well, it's based off the fact that, you know, the limited reps that he's had in practice and that kind of thing.
Do you expect him to play at all this preseason?
No comment.
That's par for the course. But here's the thing. I start to believe more and more when I start hearing some of these sound bites that there is this crazy belief within those four walls at NRG that they may be able to rectify this situation. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just be saying, you guys know the drill, you know the deal, we have no comment and we're doing it day to day, and that be it. But the fact that we know, everyone knows he's had limited reps in practice. He's had more reps at the freaking safety position. But all of a sudden, the way they're answering these questions is kind of like, well, you know, for now, but we'll see.
If we're to take that report seriously, basically the Texans are the kid with the terrible acne and braces who's about 5'3 and 100 pounds soaking wet who can't understand why the captain of the cheerleading team won't go out with them. They keep holding out hope. Hey, I'm going to ask her out and maybe she'll go out with me and not Johnny, who's the captain of the football team. Maybe she'll go out with me, but I'll ask her. And then she basically mocks him and pushes him aside. And he goes home and he goes, man, she thinks I'm a nerd or a geek or I'm ugly. And then it starts the process over every 2 weeks. He doesn't want to be here. Why are we continuing to play this
game? You heard me do that forever and a day. I kept saying it's like a relationship. If you got to beg a girl back, there's not going to be a legitimate relationship. She's coming back for whatever benefits she can soak up before she moves on again.
And at this point, what could possibly be the benefit for Deshaun Watson to come back?
As I've said again, there isn't one. All right, before we get out of here, and obviously we're going to be back again tomorrow, which is great, and so hopefully you will be too. Brian McTaggart also reporting, Jose Urquidy throwing a bullpen session today at Minute Maid, then flying to Florida to begin his minor league rehab assignment. Astros hope to have him back by September 1st. And in terms of Alex Bregman, according to Chandler Rome, he had to come off his minor league rehab assignment because it was approaching the 20-day maximum allowed for a position player. Baker said the earliest Bregman can come back to Class A Triple A Sugarland Friday. He ain't coming back anytime soon. Better hope this you're right, Patrick Creighton.
It's interesting that that's the timeline, but yeah, Bregs needs to be back. And if they're taking it that slow with him, you got to hope that they're trying to be cautious with that hammy.
Remember who cursed him if it comes to this. Hopefully we're talking about a win tomorrow. Aaron and Pat, good to have you both back. We'll see you guys again tomorrow. We appreciate you being here. It's the Press Box, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.